Good morning, Faith Chapel. It's good to be with you. Unfortunately, we can't be there in person with you, but a lot of that has to do with our role as international workers in residence at Crown College. It's a unique role that we're doing this year while we're on home assignment, doing some teaching, investing in the lives of students, especially those who are interested in feeling a call into missions and hopefully raising up that next generation. But as we're on campus, one of the big things this year obviously has been everyone needs to do their part to make sure that we keep COVID off campus, or if it gets on campus, keep it down and keep it from spreading. And so we've all been really encouraged to think through how do we make sure that we're not the ones bringing it on campus, and that the end goal of it all is really to make sure that we can keep doing classes in person. It's what the students want, so really what the faculty wants, and it's the best way. So I hope you understand. We would have loved to have been there. We love connecting, seeing people face to face, especially you guys who have been such great supporters of our work and what God is doing in West Africa. And I'm going to give just one little disclaimer as we get going here. Because this is going online, I'm going to be a little vague about some of the terms I use and some of the places and people that I mention. Just because, yeah, we need to think through security and what's wise. So, yeah, if it seems a little vague, if something's not clear, you could talk with someone on the missions committee or Pastor Dylan afterwards, and they can explain everything to you. But, yeah, so we work in West Africa. Now, as you know, I think most of you know, last time we were there and we visited, we were preparing to go back to the country that we had been working in before. But due to rising insecurity in that country, shortly after we arrived, our whole team just felt like this isn't smart. We're running too great of a risk, especially at that point, the risk of being kidnapped and that sort of thing, because that was happening right in our area. And we just felt like now is not the time. And so we moved to the next country over, but in many ways still doing the same thing. The country that we work in is 92% Muslim. So there's a lot of work to be doing there, and I work in church planting and evangelism among unreached people, specifically with one people group that you'll be hearing a little bit more about later. Leah is still working in health and health development. She's actually been working on a master's degree because this country that we work in now is a little bit more developed. She's needed a little bit of a skill upgrade because they're not looking for people necessarily just to come and serve as a nurse in their country for them. They're raising up their own health workers and they want to have jobs for those people, but they are very interested in people who can train and equip and prepare health workers in that context. And so one exciting project that we've got in the works, it's not a sure thing, but we're working with a national Christian Health Workers Association to hopefully begin a Christian nurse training school. It'll be the only one, the first one in the country, of raising up Christian nurses who are competent in what they're doing and confident to share their faith and know how to bring those two things together to provide the best practice and best care, but also to share the good news and share why they do what they do. So you can actually be in prayer for that. We are, again, working with this association, so sometimes it goes maybe a little slower, but we believe it's important that they carry the vision and this remain their project. And then, of course, obviously, coronavirus has thrown a wrench into this as well. But Lord willing, it will actually be starting next October. It will be their first semester, and it'll be a great project that Leah will be able to plug into if it all works. But definitely something to keep in prayer and part of our unfinished work that we're doing. And speaking of unfinished, that's actually the theme of Missions Conference this year. Now it's interesting because that's not a theme that I pick, that's chosen by the national office. And when I first heard it, I thought, man, that's a difficult theme to talk about. You know, because we like things completed. We like a good story, you know, beginning, middle, end, wrap it up, put a bow on it, nice and neat. And those are the stories we like to tell. Those are the stories that we like to hear. But unfinished, that's hard. It's not the, you know, the banner on the aircraft carrier, mission accomplished. We did it. But as I reflected more and more, I thought really unfinished is a great theme as we think and as we talk about missions. And that's for a couple reasons. The first reason is that I think missions, we have to realize missions will always be unfinished until it's done. As long as missions exists, as long as we do this, it will essentially always be an unfinished sort of a task. It's not something that we just get done. But what's interesting, when it does get done, I believe we'll be in a very different moment of world history, actually. And Jesus says this in Matthew 24:14. He says this, as his disciples are asking about the end of the age. Obviously, they want to know, like, how can we set our watch and know exactly when this is going to happen? And he doesn't give them a lot of specific details to hang their coats on, but he does say this, Matthew 24:14, "This gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." And it's significant because what Jesus is doing is he's tying this task of missions, getting the gospel out there in the whole world, with the end of history. Do you see how significant that is? And that's why I say when missions is finished, when it is accomplished, when it's been to every nation, we're going to be in a very different stage of history, because then the end will come. And we don't know exactly the timing, how that's going to work out. But the significant thing is we need to see missions isn't just some little side project of the church that, you know, for those people who are interested in that sort of a thing. It's actually the thing that's driving this stage of history forward to its completion. So completing missions is part and parcel of completing this age of history, so then the end can come. And what as I reflected on this theme of unfinished as well, I realized, you know, it puts us in the middle of the story. You know, and we like, again, we like to be at the end, and we know that most stories have a happy ending, and this story has a very happy ending. But when we're in the middle of the story, it calls us to participation. It calls us to anticipation as things look bad. And, you know, is the antagonist, is he going to succeed? Because it looks like his schemes are working out. And how is the protagonist, how is this all going to be brought to resolution and to that good ending? And it feels like we're riding the knife's edge oftentimes in that story. And so I want to invite you into that place, into the middle of the story. It's not always as pretty. It's not always as neat, but it calls us to be aware of what God is doing. It calls us to participation and to attention in God's big story. So that's why I think, you know, unfinished, it is a great theme, and it invites us into this place where God is working, and maybe it's not neat, maybe we can't put a bow on it, but we're there in the middle, and we're going towards the end. Now, of course, as we work in a Muslim country, we have a lot of unfinished work yet ahead of us, but I do want to tell you the specific story of one man. I'll actually share his name with you. Amazing testimony. His name is Dr. Usman So, and he is a believer from the people group that I work with. He was born in the north of our country, a dry, arid place, 100% Muslim, very much. And now as a young man, he wanted to get out of that situation. He wanted a better life, and we've only started hearing about this more recently in the news, but this has been happening since forever, where West Africans make that perilous journey across the Sahara Desert and try to get up into North Africa and maybe from there up into Europe to get a better life. And he was one of these young men who did this many years ago, again, long before we ever heard about it. And he got up to North Africa. And what's interesting is when he got up to North Africa, he began questioning things, especially questioning his faith. And of course, he was a Muslim. But, you know, Islam talks a lot about the brotherhood of all mankind, the unity of all people, and the equality of all people before God. But when he got up there, he did not experience that. He was not welcomed as a brother. He was not treated equally. And he began to question, and I had to laugh. We've actually got, hopefully get a picture up there for you, and he'll be the man up on the left. I've blurred some of the other faces again just for security, but the man there on the left is Dr. So, and I had to laugh because he told me he went through even a Rastafarian stage where he was looking into this sort of Pan-Africanism, let's get back to the old African beliefs and the old African gods. As he was looking for something else, and again, I laugh because the Dr. So I knew is a very, you know, sort of serious, more straight-laced guy. But what's interesting is he was also exposed to the gospel. And in large part, that's because there was a man in that North African country, of all places, who was a believer. He had traveled from North America and taken a job at a state university under a dictator, where he was teaching, I don't know, it was science or medical, something like that. But he intentionally took that job knowing that he could be in that sort of creative access place as a believer and hopefully have opportunity to share his faith. And he did with Dr. So, because by this point, Dr. So had actually gotten into the university. He was studying to become a medical doctor. And he met this man who shared his faith in Jesus, and there was a lot of steps along the way, but long story short, one evening as Dr. So was watching the Jesus film in this man's living room, or after watching the film, he gave his life to follow Jesus Christ. And it's significant because this was much more than just, you know, I want to get to heaven when I die. No, he took discipleship and following Jesus very seriously, and we know that because rather quickly, he was introduced to some people who had been praying for his people and his country for years already through a movement called the College of Prayer. And they had been pouring out their hearts to God for him. And the man he knew had some connection with them. And so he shared, hey, here's an answer to your prayer request. But Dr. So also caught this vision. When he heard about these people, when he heard about their desire to reach his people, he decided to come back to our country. And you have to understand, I mean, Dr. So was a dynamic guy, intelligent, charismatic. He could have done anything. He easily could have made it up to Europe. He could have made it to North America, probably. He could have written a book about his conversion. He could have lived, you know, the nice life that he was hoping to have lived when he first left our country. But he didn't do that. He came back. And he eventually opened up a clinic in the north of our country again, in a very rural, difficult, poor area, in order to reach his people. And it's Dr. So's amazing because he was a dynamic person, intelligent person, and he could interact with government people, with medical workers, even with imams, religious leaders. He just had that kind of personality, and he could also treat the shepherd who was bringing his cattle through his town and heard there was a clinic that served his people. And he would share the gospel with all those people, and many people considered Dr. So sort of the apostle to this people group. And in that picture up there, actually, that's a network of believers from this people group that he worked with, and he was a key influential leader among. Now, if you've been listening to the story, you probably notice I'm using Dr. So was in the past tense. And that's because last September, I think it was, I don't know, mid-September, I got a call late at night from my co-team leader. And he said, hey, Mark, I've got some bad news. I just got a call this evening that apparently Dr. So, after doing shift at the clinic, he was out for a run in his town, and he seems to have suffered a catastrophic heart attack. And he went to be with the Lord right there on the streets of that town that he was giving his life to serve. And I mean, that was just an incredible blow. It was a blow to us and to our team because Dr. So, he was a key part of our strategy and our work that we were doing among this people, but a key blow also to, I mean, even more so to the believers, this network of people that he was working with, and also to his staff at the clinic, because people had believed in his vision and they had gone up to serve and reach his people there along with him. And I got this next picture. It's actually the day that we were laying Dr. So in the ground, and it's unique because if you know this area, it's very dry, very dusty. We get this very short rainy season, but it happened to be rainy season at that time, and normally this field would just be all dry dust, but here was grass and just full of seed heads, and I couldn't help but think of John chapter 12 verse 24, and it says, "I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." And just, yeah, reflecting again, Dr. So did produce many seeds, and in many ways we hope that he would live longer to produce many more seeds than he did, but we don't understand God's timing all the time. But this is the work that we live in. This is the life that we are called to do, and again, follow God in that unfinished work. Now, one of the things we realized is, yes, this was not in our timing, but we also realized God had brought us and Dr. So and our team together at just the right time if this was going to happen, because on our team, we had all of the people that we needed to be able to respond in this place. We had medical people on our team. We had people working with this network of believers that he was working with. We had administrative people on our team, because there was this immediate fear of what's going to happen with this clinic. Is it all going to fall apart without Dr. So? Because he was medical doctor, he was spiritual leader, he was administrator for this thing. But again, we realized, thankfully, God had brought us together and our team could step in. And we firmly believe we are just holding this vision for a little while, because it started with a local believer, and we long to see this work, again, led forward by locals, trained and equipped. And we've seen God provide in many ways. He's provided a non-Western doctor. We actually have a Haitian man, of all things, who was brought to our country when Haiti had its earthquakes and disasters there. We actually brought people to finish their medical school in our country. And one of them was this man. Now he's a believer, which, I mean, again, where were we going to find a believing doctor in our country? But he's a believer, and he wanted to stay and serve in this country that had put him through medical school. So he's up there. We've got a young believer, amazing kind of Daniel-like guy, only believer in his village. God brought him about. He actually finished number one or number two in his class, like nationally. They all take this one exam, the civil service exam to go into government administration, and he was either number one or number two a couple years ago when he took this exam. So highly placed, being brought up into government administration, but he's been able to step in and help us out with the administrative needs of the clinic, and we're still working with this network trying to find someone who can take Dr. So's place as a pastor, as a spiritual leader, to keep that part of the work going forward. But again, it feels unfinished. It feels very much in the middle of that story, and it feels on that razor's edge. If one thing goes wrong, if we lose a few key staff members, if the administrative work doesn't go through, it feels like this could all fall apart. But that's what it means to live and work in the unfinished. And we appreciate your prayers, and we appreciate deeply your partnership for this clinic and for this work. Now, I want to move a little bit into looking at scripture. And what's surprising is, yeah, in this unfinished, difficult kind of work, as we go and we look at scripture, we actually find this sort of thing would not have been a surprise to the authors of scripture, certainly not to the Apostle Paul. And so we want to look at Philippians chapter 1, verses 4 to 6. And what's interesting is Paul is writing from a very unfinished place. He's not writing from his nice living room armchair to the church in Philippi. He's writing from prison, where he's waiting to go on trial for his life because of his work and ministry that he's been doing. And he's not writing to a church that has it all together, even though the Philippians have provided a generous gift for him. Because at that time, if you're in prison, you don't get three square meals a day. Someone from outside has to provide those, and if they don't, you might very well starve to death before you even get to your trial. And so the Philippians had sent a gift to provide for him and his needs in prison, so he's writing to thank them, but they're not perfect. Later in the letter, he's going to have to encourage two parties within the church to get along and agree with each other and bring unity to this. But this is what he says to the Philippians, chapter 4, verses 1 to 6. He says, "I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus." And there's two things I really want you to see in here. First, he talks about this partnership in the gospel. The Philippians are partnering with Paul in the unfinished work of getting the gospel out there to the unreached. That was very much Paul's call, what he was all about. I want to preach Christ where he's not yet been named, where no one has worked before, where no one has heard his name. And the Philippians were part of that unfinished work with him. And yet, at the same time, Paul also talks about how God will bring to God who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion. The Philippians themselves are not a finished product. God is still working with them. He's still growing them. And God brings these two unfinished things together for his purposes. And we really see exactly the same thing again in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 15 to 16. And again, so interesting because Paul's not writing out of a nice, neat, bow on top sort of moment. In this passage, Paul is having to fight for his authority. He's been accused by people in Corinth of having bad motives, of not having the right message. And he's having to defend himself and defend his right to be able to speak authoritatively into the lives of the Corinthians. But in the midst of this argument back and forth, we get a couple of really interesting verses in chapter 10 of 2 Corinthians, verses 15 and 16. He says, "Our hope is that as your faith continues to grow, our sphere of activity among you will greatly expand, so that we can preach the gospel in the regions beyond you." And again, we get that same sort of thing where Paul, like their faith is continuing to grow. The Corinthians are very much an unfinished product, an unfinished work, but they're also partnering with Paul to preach the gospel in the regions beyond, in the unfinished place where people don't yet know Christ. And from these passages, I hope you really see this picture, and I believe that God is inviting U.S. Alliance churches into that unfinished work overseas, that sacred space, that realm of possibility where God is working and doing things, and he's weaving your church's unfinished story together with that unfinished work overseas among those who have not even yet heard of Christ, and he's bringing this tapestry together. And so I want to encourage you, Faith Chapel as a church, like, will you push into the unfinished? Will you participate with what God is doing? And I hope you've seen a few things this morning. On the one hand, going into the unfinished, it's significant because it's participating with God in that task again that we saw in the very beginning that is driving history forward to its completion. Missions, again, it's not this little side project. We're not just kind of waiting around in this, you know, middle time, like, gee, I wonder when God is going to come back as if we can't do anything. No, God's actually called us to participate in that big part of his vision, that big part of his mission of bringing history to conclusion. This isn't a neutral time. And so I want to ask, will you join that story? The story, really, of all of history, of what God is doing here and now. And again, I hope you've also seen this morning that God isn't waiting for you to be perfect. Green Bay, God is still, you are unfinished. God has work for you there where you are. God is doing work in you, both personally and corporately. He's also wanting to use you in your community to reach your Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria. But then it comes together. God brings us unfinished people together with this unfinished story that he's telling overseas. And what's interesting, yeah, sometimes we see those loose ends. Sometimes things don't really look that clear on this side, but I believe one day God's going to flip that tapestry over and we're going to see the big picture. We're going to see how the little things that we did came together here, and the little things we're doing here come together with the things that he's doing there to weave this one beautiful picture together. Now, sometimes when I go to churches, I get the impression that people see this dichotomy between getting it done there and getting it done here, as if somehow we have to choose, as if somehow God's resources are limited and we can't do both. But I want to encourage you that as I travel and I speak in churches, the churches that I see that are most engaged overseas are often the ones who are most engaged at home as well. The more you're getting it done there, the more you're completing the task that God has for you to do in your lives, in your town, the more capacity, the more passion you're going to have to get it done there. So don't ever think that these two things are opposed to each other. No, they all come together as God weaves our unfinished stories together in him. And so I just want to encourage you as a church, will you press in to that unfinished? And that can look like a lot of different things. It can look like sending missionaries. And you know that there's a lot to this part of sending. It's not just the financial part. Obviously, we need that. We need the finances to be able to get tickets. We need the finances to be able to respond to emergencies like coronavirus. And we were incredibly blessed, actually. As I know, people were worried about finances here. We saw so many churches stepping up and wanting to give and make sure that the clinics and medical workers in our country were equipped and prepared to be able to deal with coronavirus, including Dr. So's clinic. And our team was very much able to help out with that. So thank you for giving financially to us as a family. It allows us to be there to do those things and to the ministry overseas, and also to the other workers that you're supporting. That's part of it. But what's interesting, it's much more than that. It's also prayer. And I really believe prayer is so crucial to getting this done. And it's there in the story of Dr. So. I don't think Dr. So would have come back to serve in our country if he hadn't heard, if he hadn't known these people who had been praying for his people. He was the answer to their prayers. And in some mysterious way, when we pour out our hearts passionately to God, he responds and he works. And we see it on the field. We desperately need your prayers. And sometimes, even though prayer should be like the easier thing, because it doesn't cost, you know, maybe financial resources, but it does cost our time. And sometimes it almost seems like that's the harder thing. And so I want to encourage you as a church, especially those of you who maybe aren't in a place where you can give financially, don't ever think that prayer is a lesser a way of sending and supporting missionaries. In many ways, it's the primary way. And we need to be there, but without God working, without him pouring out his spirit, without him going ahead of us to reach people, it is very hard, actually maybe even impossible for us to accomplish things there. So we covet your prayers. And it also means sending. Raising up people within your church. And I really believe every one of us has to answer that call and ask that call, like, God, are you calling me to go to these places like West Africa, where people literally have no access to the gospel unless someone from outside comes and shares with them? I really think all of us at some point should put that before God. Now, God doesn't call all of us overseas. We shouldn't all feel like we have to do that, but we should at least put that question before him and ask, God, is this what you want me to do in my family? And part of that also means raising up our children with that expectation. Sometimes it's almost harder to send our kids than it is for us to go personally, because we know we might lose out, you know, on that time with them or with the grandkids, or they might be in a place that's not this, you know, sort of American bubble wrapped safe sort of a place. But will you raise your kids with that expectation that God might one day call them? And if he does, will you stand behind them? Will you support them and say, yes, we are there to send you. We'll never hold you back if that's what God is calling you to. So there's just so many ways that you can participate. And I think being in an Alliance church is one of the best places to be, to get involved in what God is doing overseas. So I just want to thank you, Faith Chapel, for the way you guys have supported our family, the way you continue to support us, and everything else that you're doing in missions. And again, God is bringing your story together, and you might never see it, you know, on this side of the veil, but he's bringing your stories together with untold stories of unreached people overseas, and someday you will get to see that picture. So be encouraged. Know that God is using you. And thank you for having us. Thank you for standing behind us. God bless you.